Hello, everybody. How you doing? Hope all is well. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about one of the major tools that we're going to be using to sort of do this thing, philosophy as a way of life, right? Basically, as we've said, and as I hope I've established in the first lecture, there are certain key elements to this, right? So to pursue philosophy as the art of living, as a form of therapy, we're going to have a lot of different techniques, right? One of which is listening to this right now, right? That being said, today we're talking about another technique to get us on the path to knowing ourselves, caring for ourselves, and serving others that I think is really effective. So in Blackboard, if you're in my class, we have a book called Self-Writing Guide. That's what I'm talking about today. This short episode, I think, will probably cover the first couple sections, then we'll get into more details. And this book is sort of, especially these first couple sections, isn't too much of a, let's say, a deep dive philosophically into the practice or into the history of the practice. We're going to have more discussions on that later in our work together. There's a whole chapter in our other book, Bibliotherapy, once again on Blackboard, that is called Daily or Frequent Philosophical Practices. And that's where we really get into some of the more sort of philosophical, historical comments on self-writing as a practice. So what this is kind of more of a practical discussion, of course, also philosophical in nature. We'll throw in a little bit of history, but it really is very practical. The first part of this book is about two pages, and it's basically just saying what self-writing is from this practical standpoint and why we might want to consider it, and really sort of like to what degree might it be effective, right? So just to start off a little bit with the first page of this book, Self-Writing Guide, it says, self-writing is the process and practice of frequently taking time to examine and understand ourselves with a pen or pencil in hand. So it's that simple, right? Instead of just thinking, we want to start writing. Now, why bother with that initially, right? We have like tens of thousands of thoughts a day, right? I think what this page also gets into very meaningfully is basically like at times we're fighting blind, which is to say we don't understand our thoughts fully. We can't, or we have difficulty controlling them, right? We talked about flaws last time. We'll have some strategies in this book to deal with flaws in a very effective way, or at least a more effective way. And basically, right, we're not able to see our thinking. We definitely don't get into like the why behind a lot of our thinking. We might be, you know, dealing with anxiety, feelings of sadness, being disappointed, being stressed, being imbalanced, right? All these things are very common. And I think what's becoming, or not necessarily becoming uncommon, but there's a great book called iGen by Gene Twinge that I really recommend. It's very interesting. It's sort of a look into, well, I mean, it's like, I guess it would be, it's the first generation pretty much born with iPhones, right? Born with smartphones, hence the name iGen, right? And I think what self-writing does, and I mentioned that book because it sort of documents the social, emotional, psychological, among other things, impacts of having smartphones just ready at hand all the time. And one of the other conversations she has, I think, really well is basically that generation is also sort of turning away from religion. And I think what this does ultimately, this meaning a self-writing practice, you know, if we're not necessarily going to be having spiritual exercises in our lives, spiritual communities, right? This is a good, let's say, way to either supplement that. If that is a part of your life, it can add to it, I think, in a very meaningful way. For example, one of the strategies we'll talk about, I've had students pair it with a number of different religious texts, right? Their experience reading, let's say, for example, the Bible has been improved by implementing one of the practices specifically I'm thinking that we'll talk about with self-writing, and it's improved their relationship to a higher power. Whereas I think this also could work really effectively if you're someone who isn't necessarily religious, which is to say you might believe in a higher power, you might not, but either way, you're not going to a house of worship on a weekly basis, or you're not, let's say, praying on a regular or daily basis. This, I think, could also be a secular approach to our souls, right? Everybody's, everyone has a soul, so we have to talk about this. So that being said, let me read a little bit more here, I think, again, from this practical perspective, right? Self-writing is the habit of sitting down alone, maybe with some music on and a cup of coffee, and focusing on writing for yourself and about yourself in order to try to shape yourself. And I think the key there too is like, and we'll talk about this when we establish some virtues you need for self-writing. This is something that involves a process, something that involves effort, something that, you know, we have to understand, you know, we're not going to ever be perfect, but we can try. And in that trying, we'll make progress. And in that progress, we should feel good about ourselves, right? And not only will we feel good about ourselves, we'll feel better about life, right? So this isn't about becoming perfect. This is about pursuing growth through the practice of, again, sitting down with a pen and a paper and examining our thoughts, okay? It is the process of writing about your thoughts, feelings, and actions on a frequent, if not daily, or even more than once daily basis, with the aim of understanding and caring for yourself. When we do this, we become healthier versions of ourselves, which serves everyone around us. And we can also offer help and service to others more effectively, right? So I think that, to me, that's something I sort of borrowed from Thich Nhat Hanh when he, you know, great Zen thinker, right? When we take better care of ourselves, everyone benefits. I think that's really an accurate point. And it doesn't stop there. We have to do more than that, right? Which is why I had that second part of that sentence. We have to actively and proactively, authentically and justly try to engage with others, right? All of which is served by the self-writing, because not only can we examine ourselves with this, but of course we could examine other people in our world as well, right? And again, the whole point of this too is to do that with a greater sense of deliberation and a greater sense of clarity, right? When we learn how to wrestle with our own thoughts and feelings and actions, we get better at doing the same with and for those around us, right? So we want to get this practice in. This is always, again, as the class is sort of aimed, right? That Socratic idea of knowing yourself is really where this practice can start, right? For those of you who may take a course with me in the future, one I might be offering is on logic-based therapy. And it's basically, as the name implies, it's using logic, which is a branch of philosophy, to sort of work through negative ways of thinking and feeling. And then ultimately, the six steps of logic-based therapy culminate in an action plan, right? So self-writing, too, is an interesting balance between taking action and thinking and feeling. So when I say know yourself, when we go into care for yourself, a part of the self-writing, too, is to encourage new action. And the self-writing itself is likely or could be a new action that will be helpful in creating better ways of thinking and feeling, right? So it kind of feeds on itself in a very interesting way as well. And I thought I'd make that clear, right? So no matter what, as I said, right, we want to stick with this ancient idea of philosophy or the art of living. This is from Marcus Aurelius, being more like wrestling than dancing, right? There's a few reasons he gives for this. And I think ultimately a key one for me that I've pulled from this analogy is the unpredictability in a wrestling match versus the choreographed nature of a dance, right? The sort of resilience one needs because you're being attacked in a wrestling match as well, right? So in order to deal with the sort of, let's say, misfortunes of life, the bad things that the universe will throw at us, the difficulties, we need a companion, right? I mentioned this in the last episode, I think. Philosophy is that companion, and self-writing, in a literal sense, your notebook can go everywhere with you. Or your notebook can sit in one spot, let's say in your home or at your work, and you could go there and you know it's reliable, it's there, and it becomes a place for you to, once again, get rid of some emotions could be one thing, get rid of some thinking, just get it out, then we can see it more clearly. We have this very powerful vantage point. If you were a general, you'd want the higher ground, right? And another analogy is you wouldn't wrestle blindfolded. So the writing allows us to get out of our own heads and see with greater clarity. The writing allows us to establish order in what might be a set of chaotic thoughts. It allows us to more clearly see, let's say, to use kind of a cliche, right, the silver lining in some negative thoughts, because we can encourage ourselves more clearly in our writing to be deliberate. And we'll see that I have 12 strategies for us that we're going to get into in a different episode that create a sense of deliberation and intention. And one of the virtues we'll talk about also is having a sense of purpose. So that's knowing how to set up a writing session, going in with that sense of clarity. And then also, you know, a capital P sense of purpose, like I'm doing this with a larger sense of who I might become in the future, who I should become. And that's what's going to motivate this practice. So we'll talk about that as well. But this idea of blindness in life and then using the self-writing to fight that, to wrestle more effectively with the world around us, to wrestle more effectively with ourselves, to gain the higher ground in a literal sense, or to look down at our thinking instead of being immersed in it, instead of being, let's say, instead of being suffocated by it, we can get it out and look down on it. It's a greater sense of control. greater sense of clarity, all really good things, right? We'll talk a lot about Michel Foucault in this chapter that's in Bibliotherapy. And one great idea he presents is the notion that self-writing is basically like a tool for spiritual combat, right? So if you daily are able to sharpen this tool and work on it and work with it, it'll also work on you. And that's the meaningful aspect of it, right? That's the shaping ourselves element of things. So I kind of sort of end this little page here with, if you're interested in leading a more peaceful, disciplined, anxiety-free, stress-free, confident life, then the practice of taking time out to cultivate yourself through self-writing will be useful, right? So let's keep that in mind. Those things should interest all of us. And also we could add to that as well, a life where we're more able to serve others. If any or all of that interests you, then I would strongly suggest taking the opportunity to look at the self-writing book and also taking our weekly work together in this class as an opportunity to practice this. Go out, get a notebook, order a notebook, one that you think you'll enjoy using. If that you don't want to do that, that's fine. Grab some paper, anything, right? Let it be consistent. And again, we'll talk about the virtues in a minute here on the next episode, but this is a tool to serve you in shaping yourself and serving others. And it's something that we really in the class will have an opportunity to work with and on when we do our philosophical meditations, and when we do our weekly assignments. And I ask also that you consider adopting a technique, a strategy, a self-writing sort of, let's say, program of development sort of in addition to that. So let me get to the next section. We'll end this episode here to keep these short. And we'll go into the next chapter, which is going to be about the key elements of an effective self-writing practice. Thank you for listening. Talk to you soon. Hello, everybody. How you doing? Hope all is well. Back with another episode on the self-writing practice guide, right? So this chapter, or this short section, let's say, is on the key elements of an effective writing practice. We can kind of look at these as virtues, right? So as I say in the first line, there are a few virtues one needs to cultivate in order to have a healthy self-writing practice. In short, we should strive to be consistent, be honest, be vulnerable and confident, be focused, and be patient. So we cultivate these things when we're doing the practice, and we need to also see them as the key elements of executing the practice, right? So I'll do a little brief overview here. Of course, if you're in my class, you have this available to you on Blackboard, but I do think these are conversations worth having, right? So first one is be honest. And there's a reason for this being first, right? If we're not confronting ourselves honestly, there really isn't much of a point here, right? And one of the great things about the self-writing practice, and if we were working in person, you'd have time to do this in class with our philosophical meditations, is that it can be private, right? And it should be, I would say, generally speaking. Of course, you know, once you write something, if you think it would be helpful to share it with somebody, obviously that's a great idea, right? That being said, you want to have the sense and, again, the practical sort of execution of the practice where it is just you and yourself or you and the notebook, right? The reason for that is that privacy, I think, encourages us to be as honest as possible because we're not afraid of being judged by another person. So we're going to be able to be more open, right? There are things that we wouldn't want to say to anybody else. The notebook becomes a place for that. There are things too, and this sort of will go into our next virtue because all these really connect, I think, pretty nicely. In terms of being vulnerable and being confident, well, you sort of need to be vulnerable so you could then be honest. And then in order to write that, you need to be confident because you have to face yourself, and that takes some courage. Right? So even though we're not being judged by anybody else, and I do suggest once again that the book is private, we fear sort of judging ourselves in a way, I think, at times. And when we write it, I believe, or even when we say it out loud, and if nobody can even hear it, to a degree, and you know, and this might be just me, but it becomes realer in a sense. And that sense of realness can be kind of frightening in a way. But that's, you know, that's where a lot of the meaning will come from, I think, is confronting ourselves honestly and being vulnerable enough to ask certain questions, being vulnerable enough to confront our ways of thinking, feeling, and acting that maybe we're not proud of, that, you know, maybe we need to change, but we lack the confidence to, or we lack the strategy to. So that's where the confidence has to come in, right? We move through that fear of judging ourselves, through the fear of kind of making it real in a way. And we pursue truth, right? So if we prioritize honesty when we're writing, not only will we be able to sort of hopefully discover the truth in the external world, right? Like the truth of the way we might be perceiving something. We could, again, use the notebooks to observe our own actions, to observe the actions of others.
the feelings that we seem to pick up from others, the feelings we have within ourselves, all of these things can be tested for truthfulness more effectively when we see them more clearly in the notebook, right? Especially when it comes to our own thoughts, right? We're attempting the notebook really with writing too, to be articulate in a way that, let's say, is more exact, is more organized than what we might be thinking, right? It's going to be easier to call ourselves out. The truth becomes more accessible as we try to articulate it, right? And the more clear that articulation is, the more we can change it, or and the more easily we can work with it, right? So that's why we do the notebook practice, right? We will know if we are bullshitting ourselves more quickly when we write, and can then look down at what we believe to be true. Again, if we are pursuing the truth, which once again is why this is the first virtue. We have to set out not to just write about anything. We have to be at least moving towards something that is truer than what we are currently thinking, maybe. We have to test our thinking to see if it's faulty and incorrect and untrue. Or if it, I mentioned the word doxa last episode, right? And there are sort of, there's a couple different ways to understand that. Doxa could be understood as like a weak opinion. It could be understood as common opinion. Now, I think to some degree, at some times and in some examples, we can understand common to mean different things, of course, at least in my perception of that, to make it more interesting. If you're in a room full of experts and the common opinion is something, well, okay, obviously still examine it, but it would be likely the case that opinion might be more reliable, right, for example. But we have to be very careful with doxa, because there's that connotation too that it is false. Again, we're just talking about the use of the word here, and I interpret it a little bit differently to make it kind of a fuller conversation. But ultimately, we're testing for truthfulness. We need techniques for that. Dialogue is another great technique to question things. Well, the notebook is yet again, back to we talked about wrestling last episode, you don't want to wrestle blindfolded. We want to get down to the truth as effectively as possible. This is a pathway to that. The written word will help us illuminate the truths that our thoughts and feelings obscure. That's a great idea. Our anger might get in the way of seeing the truth. Once again, when we write, we can grapple with the anger more effectively. We can slow down as well. We're not just rushing in our thoughts. We're asking our minds and bodies and souls to do something else. We're slowing down to write, to read, to see, to articulate. That slowness is a good thing. The solitude is a good thing. Let's start the practice off with the intention of being truthful and pursuing the truth, and let's continue to cultivate that with an openness to being vulnerable, and then meeting that or coupling that vulnerability with the confidence to confront the ideas. Okay? We will likely confront a little bit of fear when we do this. We will discover things in our notebooks about ourselves and our world that might surprise us. Sometimes it'll feel really good, sometimes it won't feel that good. Both of those experiences are meaningful. We have to sit with both of them. Okay, there is usually a sense of relief as we move into the confidence to confront ourselves on the page. We cannot truly be confident without fear. And we not only cultivate that virtue with authentic, confident self-writing, but it also becomes a starting point for the development of other virtues as well. And we'll see that, right? And that sentence too, we can interpret in a couple ways. The confidence to confront ourselves daily, to pursue truth in the notebooks, to pursue, once again, that cultivation of the self, that knowledge of the self, is giving us the virtue of self-knowledge, the virtue of confidence, once again, the ability to pursue truth. And it's also giving us the virtue, and we'll see this in a second here, of being focused. We're practicing something that I think in our modern times is really under attack. We live in exceedingly distracted times. Okay, but one of the things that this practice really requires, and it's another virtue that we get from the first couple of virtues, right, to sit down, let me figure things out, let me truly know myself, let me truly care for myself, let me pursue truths, let me be open to feeling vulnerable, let me be confident to move through that and write what I have to write and face it and read it and think about it honestly. You need to focus for that. That's a big deal. That's not a small task, right? So we don't want to be distracted when we're doing this. So the next virtue is be focused, or the next, let's say, key element that we need, right? You owe it to yourself to make this kind of time and space, right? Time when you're not giving only half your attention. Even if it's just 5 minutes every day, if it's focused time, it will be meaningful. Okay, put your phone away, maybe only use it as a timer or maybe for some music, but do not answer emails, do not respond to texts, do not be reading something else as you're doing this. Really try to focus on this. Okay, we're training ourselves now, not only once again in pursuing the truth, pursuing self-knowledge and self-care, but we're training ourselves to focus, which is a skill we can use throughout our lives. The ability to suspend the rest of the world and to be attentive to one task will serve you in all that you do if you enact it. Look at self-writing as a training ground for this important skill. The philosophical term for this kind of focus, and or we could even say vigilance, is prosaké. We'll confront this word a lot in that practice chapter, which can be understood as attention to oneself to make sure that we use our reason in the pursuit of self-mastery. Prosaké is a pathway to growth through dialogue with ourselves, which is a pathway to self-love. As Seneca said, try to perfect yourself, if for no other reason, in order that you may learn how to love. Right? So the idea of attentiveness, once again, greater attention to ourselves will hopefully be training grounds to give greater attention to others. That's a hugely important part of loving others, to actually pay attention to people regularly, to be awake to who they are, what their needs are, what their thoughts, feelings, and actions are. We need to cultivate that attentiveness and that vigilance. Towards what? So in this case, it's self-mastery. But also, we could work on developing mastery in all other parts of our lives. If you want to do that, you need to learn how to focus. There's a great book by Dr. Cal Newport called Deep Work, where he talks about this. Right, so this idea of prosaké, pursuit of self-mastery through attentiveness, through vigilance, is a wonderful idea. And again, there's great carryover here. As we'll see with our strategies, which is an episode that we're going to talk about in a little bit, you can have a whole practice based on researching something else outside of yourself. That, of course, will fuel your personal development in some regard. But ultimately, it's about learning how to be focused, using the writing for clarity. Right? And again, we learn how to love when we pursue growth. Because, and this is a great, another piece from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Zen Buddhist that we already mentioned earlier, last episode, right? When love stops growing, it starts to die. So growth is an essential element of loving ourselves and loving others. To be focused is the best way to grow effectively. So we're practicing that with this. Being with people in a genuine, authentic sense is needed. Being with ourselves is needed. That's what the self-writing is for. So we cultivate that virtue, learning how to suspend the world and be focused, right? And then that will fuel and be a key element of what will make this practice work for you. Right, next one. Be consistent and be patient. Nothing will happen overnight with this. Right? It might be the case that we have some control over how we shape our habits and that our habits then shape us. Okay? We have to at least try the writing practice for some period of time consistently with some patience to really give it a fair shot, right? We could try to train ourselves day in, day out as we would train the body with moderate, consistent effort with an eye toward progress. And it's that simple, right? So how would progress look in a self-writing practice? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that you write for longer, which that could be it, right? But what I think it does mean to a degree would be that over time you're able to be more honest with yourself. Back to virtue one, right? Over time, you're able to really feel good about the practice. It becomes woven into your life. You do it kind of naturally, right? So for me, and this is a great sort of personal anecdote to highlight why being consistent is so important, right? Sometimes you'll feel the self-writing practice, you'll feel its power because of its presence. You'll have a good day of writing, you'll kind of find something out, or you'll realize something, or you'll be able to, let's say, even just to say one example, you'll address a memory that's been bothering you, you'll create peace around it, or you'll create a really compelling, engaging vision for your future that'll inspire you to take action that day. Or let's say, again, just going through some examples of potential practices, which we'll review in the next episode, you'll find a quote that really resonates with you, you'll write it down, you'll think about it, it'll help you, right? You'll learn how to create meaning with your daily life from not just doing the to-do list, but by sitting with the tasks and like asking why bother and having good answers for that, that'll make you feel good, right? So that's the presence. But what I really discovered, this was early, not early, but it was like in the last fall, basically, I stopped writing, right? So I noticed the power of the practice of self-writing on a daily basis really profoundly as a result of its absence. I found last fall that I was becoming really easily stressed. Like small stuff was really bothering me more than it should. Then it started sort of piling up, right? And I became a generally more stressed out person, right? A generally less resilient person. And I realized, oh, like why is this happening? I had a lot on my plate, what have you, whatever, right? But ultimately I was healthy. Things were going generally okay. And I realized, oh, I haven't been writing. I stopped. Like it's been about 2 months. I haven't even picked up a pen to like do my old practice. And my old practice that I still continue today is I wake up, I put the date, I write a mantra, and I sort of start with gratitude. Then I get into intentions, and my intentions are pretty much always the same. So I have like general intentions, right? Every day I want to grow, I want to serve, right? These are things I write to myself. And then I kind of go on off of that intentions about how I want to specifically embody it that day. And I'll kind of work in other mantras and ideas as per their need. But each day I'm confronting that need, that sense of need, right? So for example, another thing I've been writing a lot recently is that life is not a competition and life is not a race. And that has real implications for me, right? Life is not a race for me has also then been leading to my days feeling like they're a little bit slower, which is good. And I'll even repeat that mantra to myself throughout the day, like let today be slow, don't rush, right? And that's been really helpful for me. And then I actually added this practice recently too. At the end of the day, I've been sitting and I've been writing for another 5 minutes or so about what I accomplished that day. And maybe also about what I left undone. All right, so I'm gonna do this tomorrow. Right, and that's been helpful too, keeping me on track and giving myself some encouragement and some, you know, some scrutiny as well. So those mantras at the beginning of the day, those intentions, that gratitude is helpful. We have to touch down on that. So again, for me, I stopped doing that. And I felt its absence. When I did, I made some time, I think it was on a Saturday, like for an hour, and I just wrote. And I felt a little bit better afterwards, but I'm like, okay, this has to become consistent again. So we might notice it in its absence, and we might notice it with its presence, right? So either way, being consistent is key. And also, I like to say be patient because we shouldn't have unrealistic expectations for this. You're not going to write for a week and all of a sudden no longer be anxious about graduating. You're not going to write for a week and all of a sudden not be stressed at all at work. Okay? We have to be patient with it and we have to be purposeful with it. And I think the next episode will be really helpful with that because I'll give us some technique suggestions here. Right? So it will not work overnight as we've been saying. We have to give it some time. We have to also be open to keeping things the same when they're working and making small changes when they don't work. Okay? The whole point is not to quit, but to be willing to make changes. Right? So keep that in mind as well. Let's get to our final virtue here, or key element. We have to be purposeful. Right? So we have to spend time cultivating a sense of purpose with our practice. Create a large vision and then small aims for how you like to develop yourself. Craft an image of how life could be better and of the vices or problems you would like to transcend or move beyond. And this is constant, this is consistent, right? Think of purpose as both purpose, lowercase, and capital P, purpose. The lowercase might be how you will structure a self-writing session for that day. Right, so again, for me, I know my morning writing, the purpose, let me get some gratitude, let me get some intentions. And also another part of this too is that this is where the life is not a race, life is not a competition came in. I wake up every day feeling like I have to get going immediately, pressuring myself. So the writing reminds me to take my time a little bit in the morning, be appreciative, and not put myself in competition with anybody. Or even, let's say, I think competing with ourselves is generally a healthy idea, but I become excessive about it. So I have to learn how to reel that in, right? So that's both my lowercase purpose, which is to say I wake up, let me get 5 to 10 minutes of writing, calm writing with some coffee, some water, some music. So that's a small purpose. It's driven by, I'm oriented towards a goal there. Small though, it's because it's 10 minutes. The larger purpose is I need to calm down. The larger purpose is if I take life a little bit slower, I think I'll enjoy it more. The larger purpose is allowing myself to have the confidence that if I slow down a little bit, nothing wrong will happen. If anything, I'll feel more, let's say, I'll feel more energetic because I'll be less tired from the stress I'm putting on myself, right? So as I'm saying here, right, it might be the self-writing practice. It might be to create a sense of calm in the morning or make sure that you took risks that day to work on developing your confidence. And these are just examples, right? But that second part, that's checking in with yourself at the end of the day. Did you speak up in that meeting at work, or did you allow yourself to succumb to fear of being judged? Okay, so the capital P sense of purpose is the larger vision that you can craft, revisit, and return to when you need inspiration and an image to call your gaze forward and up towards your self-defined higher self. So I know I have to be less stressed out. That's for like just health in general. I know I could benefit tremendously from relaxing a little bit. So me telling myself to relax, that it's not a race, is going to be helpful for me. And I have moments and days where I am calm and I am very productive and I feel more fulfilled. So that kind of reaffirms the notion that pursuing this larger vision is actually really healthy. Right? So we're going to end this episode here. This was like a good 20 minutes. And then I will be recording the next one on some different practices. All right? So hope this was helpful. Thank you for listening. Talk to you soon. Hello, everybody. How you doing? Hope all is well. Welcome to the third installment of our recordings on self-writing and our self-writing guide. So we're in chapter 3 here. I do ask that you read this. Once again, it's on Blackboard, so I'm not going to be too exhaustive with this lecture. But I do want to give some general points on each of the strategies. And basically, before we even get to that, on how to use the strategies, right? So first of all, these are not, you know, this is not a comprehensive list, right? So there could be other strategies you might think of. I've had students think of their own strategies that have been really, really interesting and powerful for them. So please feel free to use this simply as a starting point. This whole list, some of these I've gotten from my own practices myself. Others I've gotten, you know, from researching and reading and learning about the ancient practices of self-writing. Some of it's been inspired by just, you know, even one line from philosophy. Make a practice out of it. So please, once again, see what works for you. Try different ones out. Add your own elements to them. Combine them, whatever you want to do, right? The hope is that, once again, something you make as a result of this class just works for you, right? So that being said, let's get into some of these ideas, right? The first one is simply a gratitude practice. So I think we have two elements here we want to consider: remembering the good things and imagining the bad. Right? So this is coming, at least from my perspective, from my experience, from Stoicism, right? The idea that we have to imagine the bad specifically is kind of coming from my approach to Epictetus, who we'll study a lot, right? He tells us to every day wake up and, for example, visit the idea that we're mortal. The hope isn't, of course, that, you know, we're encouraging that we pass away. The hope is that we use this imagination to give us strength, right? To make us grateful for the fact that we are simply just alive in that moment. We'll talk enough about memento mori. I think I already talked about it a few episodes ago. It'll come up a few times in this semester. It even comes up in this chapter, right? So basically, to be thinking of these other situations as, you know, let's say an imagination exercise can relieve some suffering in the moment. Right. One example of this might be you're in traffic, you're getting angry. Well, be grateful that something worse isn't happening. Be grateful that also you have a car. Be grateful that it's not also pouring rain outside. Be careful. Be grateful that at least you're healthy enough to see the road. Be grateful that you're able to hear some music on the radio, and be grateful that you're not disabled in those ways. Right. So these are all things we could do to alleviate our daily suffering. Imagining the, you know, how things can be worse is a really good way to become grateful for what's in front of us. So that's one pathway to gratitude that we can put in our daily writing and also our daily thinking. That might be really useful. And then remembering the good things too is a great, that's a simple but powerful practice to wake up and write down three things you're grateful for. That's something I've done in the past that's really served me very well, right? And maybe not even just writing them down, but taking some time to think about them or writing a few sentences about each. You could do this, of course, at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, at the end of the week, whatever you want to do, right? But gratitude is a powerful pathway to a lot of other good stuff in life, right? Living in the moment, it grounds us, right? If we're grateful for what we have, we're not going to be as desirous for what we do not have. Then when we're thinking about what we do not have as a way to get us grateful for what we do have, that's like really grounding us, I think, in a very positive way, to live in the moment, live and work with what we have in front of us, right? Also, Epictetus is saying, you want to be happier? Try being more grateful. So it might even be a pathway to happiness as well, right? So a lot of good stuff going on there. Once again, practically speaking, you could even have on a daily basis or every other day, whatever, sit and write about how things could be worse. Damn, I really should appreciate what I have. And what's ironic too about life is that a lot of times we get what we want, and then what we want eventually becomes a pain in the ass, right? So like, you get the new job, it's great for 2 weeks, and oh, okay, it's still a job. Or I still have some qualities of my old job I didn't like. Well, you made it. It's still a good thing. I remember, for example, when I started a job out, when I first started teaching, and I still love to do this, right? But it was like, it was absolutely elated that I got the opportunity. And then I use that to remind myself on a rough day, or let's say I have a class that isn't participating, which isn't a problem asynchronously. That's interesting, right? Maybe it's a weird benefit. I can't tell if you're paying attention or not. I'm just imagining you are. And that's you know, that's okay. That works for me. So maybe I'll have a difficult class or a difficult day with a class, right, where they're not really engaged or whatever, right? I remind myself, you know, there was a time when I was like really applying to do this and people were ignoring me and I couldn't, you know, get my foot in the door somewhere. So that reminder, again, that using that imagination, a little bit of the past there. I mean, what if I never got to do this? I've been really happy doing this, right? It's all ways we can guide ourselves with gratitude to lead a happier, more fulfilling life, right? So once again, waking up, writing down what you're grateful for, spending some time with this imagination exercise, crafting image of how things might be worse and getting us grateful for how they are, all good ideas, right? Let's go to number two. Harmony through intentions and execution. This is right from Epictetus, right? This is from Pierre Hadot's Philosophy is a Way of Life. And this practice has two parts to it, right? So we have a morning practice or a morning element and a nighttime element. Once again, I do suggest you read this. I think I'm going to obviously leave out some details in the lecture. But to generally talk about this, we wake up, a lot of us make to-do lists. That's good. That is good. You give yourself aims. Aims are important, 100%. Epictetus asks that we fill that out a little bit more with some philosophy, with some meaning. Because the tasks, if they don't already feel empty, again, especially when they're habitual, they at times can feel empty. We do not want to feel like our days are empty. You have enough of those days in a row, things start feeling pretty meaningless. So if on a daily basis we confront the ideas that guide us, or let's say that should guide us when we do these things, we'll see them as bigger than what they really are. Or maybe even that's an overstatement, right? We'll see them for what they truly are, because we're becoming constantly, right? There's no such thing as doing nothing. Everything you're doing is shaping who you are is one, I think, potentially powerful idea we could think about, right? So you don't want to just go to work or go to the meeting or go to class, or, you know, you want to go and you want to sort of prescribe to yourself ways you want to be in that space. I want to be kind. When I go pick up my sibling from school, I don't want to just ignore them. I want to be kind to them. I want to pursue that. So how would that look? What would that mean? Well, maybe I make sure I smile at them. Maybe I make sure I ask them about how their day was and I actually listen. So all of a sudden now we're giving ourselves these prescriptions on how to live. We're kind of creating our own ethics. That's what we need to do, right? We can imbue, we can give our lives a sense of meaning. We have to confront the notion that maybe we have to be the sources for that. That's what Epictetus is asking for us in the morning. Give your life a sense of orderliness and a sense of meaning that emanates from you, that comes from you. I don't want to just lecture. I want to be awake when I do this. When I make my to-do list, and at this point, in all honesty, this is something I do mentally, but I'm not just putting the test. I sit with the test. Why is this important? And I've had difficulty with this in the past too, and I'm grappling with it now in a better way. I've had to give more meaning to, like, let's say, being more organized. I'll put that generally because that's how disorganized I was at one point. Like putting things, even just papers. I got this new like accordion folder thing. And I'm excited about it, but I had to get myself excited about it. I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of looking for papers. Like, day to day doesn't bother me, but like every 3 days I'll lose something and it'll take me 45 minutes to find it and I'll get angry. So I'm like, all right, I could avoid this. Also, something as simple as getting passionate about putting my keys in the same spot. How did that look? Well, I got like this box that I put the keys in that I actually like how the box looks. So now I'm not looking for my keys as much. I spent most of my adult life looking for keys. The other large portion of it in traffic. So I'm like, okay, I got to make these experiences better. I have to make them meaningful. I know I'm going to maybe hit traffic today and listen to an audiobook. And when I'm in traffic, also, this is great. This is a great idea of what he's saying. In the morning, I'm going to go somewhere. I might hit traffic. All right, let me prescribe the idea that's going to guide me in traffic today. It's not going to be anger. I'm going to be guided by the notion of patience, the idea of learning. I'm going to put on an audiobook, like I said, right? I've listened to a lot of great audiobooks that have really changed the way I think, feel, and act in sitting in traffic. So not only did they alleviate stress and anxiety in that moment, which is positive, but they also helped me develop myself. They gave me tools I've used in the future. It's a great idea. But it was only because I sat with myself, I sat with this experience. I'm like, how can I make this different? So when we sit every day with our experiences, how should I be guided? Right? How should I, let's even say, guide myself is a better way to put it, during these obligations, during these tasks. Life will take on a greater sense of meaning. And we, of course, want to avoid meaninglessness. Not a good idea, right? So that being said, we do a to-do list. We kind of put it on philosophical steroids. Let's think about the why, the ideas that will guide us. I make this for myself, right? I don't have to go to class today. I'm choosing to go, and I'm not only going to go, but I'm going to try to get something out of it. I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to be focused. I'm going to challenge myself to participate. I'm going to be confident. Things to think about. Then at night, we check in with ourselves. And this is great too. We have to see at night for Epictetus how we failed and how we've succeeded. Applying, as he says, you know, that self-scrutiny with kindness where possible. Right? So we check in. That's the accountability that we need. Was I really nice today with my family, or was I kind of rude? Could I have been a little more confident today? Could I have been a little more productive in the face of a delay? All to the good, all to the development of the self, right? Self-awareness, self-knowledge first, how to go today, be honest. All right, now let me give it a new direction after I scrutinize myself. All right, cool. Number three, I just want a lot. I think for me, I grapple with uncertainty. And ironically, so one of the audiobooks I listened to that was really impactful for me, it's a couple audiobooks. One was Work Like Da Vinci and one was Think Like Da Vinci. I went through a Da Vinci phase where I was like really learning a lot about him. He's interesting to me. And this idea that we get from, I think it was from pretty much, like Da Vinci embodied it and embraced it. And I think it's a term from painting. Sfumato, it's an Italian word. It sort of means like foggy almost. It's like when something's obscure and there's like a fogginess to something, it's like a shadow, kind of get, it's not clear what you're seeing. Life is full of uncertainty. And uncertainty plagues us. For myself included, I'm plagued by the uncertainty, especially, you know, in these times with career stuff, I've been feeling very uncertain about the future. Even just the fact that, and I mean this kindly, like, you know, I never thought I would teach asynchronously because I never really, nobody ever presented me with the opportunity. I've always enjoyed teaching in class. And now here I am. I'm hopefully going to be offering value to all of you. I'm hopefully going to be giving us a good experience here and offering us a good experience. But it's really uncertain about how to even approach this in the right way, right? So we have to get better at looking at life's uncertainty and being comfortable with it, not being afraid of it, right? And certainly not being paralyzed by it. So I think making time to sit and research the things in general that we're interested in, but especially those things that are uncertain, where there is sfumato, that we have to work through some, or we have to work through a lack of clarity, that's a great thing to practice in our self-writing exercise. So maybe it's, you know, for example, this week, I really want to spend 10 minutes a day focusing on my job future. Just one example, right? Or focusing on, you know, I really want to get into better physical health. Let me spend a week for 10, 20 minutes in my notebook just learning and writing stuff down and carrying that question with me of how can I be healthy inward and researching it and then writing about it, right? Because once again, when we write, we have greater clarity. When we write, our thoughts are more organized. When we write, we can look more clearly at our actions and feelings for truth, right? So I think those are actually two very good examples. Or let's even say you don't know what career path you want to take at all. Sit with that question and don't be bothered by it as much as you were in the past. Sit with it, write it at the top of the page, get after it. Read, listen, write. Read what you write, analyze it, right? So the self-writing and that paired with the development, the research, works for the external goals of that nature, right? And once again, we sit and it's consistent. I can almost guarantee you, even learning a little bit on a daily basis about something that's unclear, that's bothering you, will alleviate some of that feeling of being bothered. I can almost guarantee it. right? Because the mind, the body, and the soul are all communicating. If your mind and your soul are anxious, you start taking action, it almost alleviates it immediately. You're nervous for the test, the best thing to do is stop thinking about it, study for 10 minutes. It'll calm you down. Because you start feeling like you're acting, you're taking action, creating a new self towards the direction you need to go in, right? It's the same thing here. And I live this actually on a regular basis. I'm constantly, you know, unclear about things. I'm constantly asking questions, right? What's the best, even for me as a doctoral student, what's the best way to write a dissertation proposal? I don't know. I've never written one before. So I have to figure this out. I could be stressed about it and think I'm going to do a bad job at it, or I can spend, you know, 5-10 minutes here and there learning about it, drafting stuff, right? And that, once again, helps us relieve stress because we're taking action towards a valued aim that we're defining for ourselves. And when we make that a practice, we're getting used to, we're training that skill of, oh, here's something uncertain. I'm not going to let it scare me. I'm just going to examine it. I'm going to get my pen in hand. Let me see what's up. Let me see what I can observe. Let me create a consumption habit. Which is to say, let me listen to this. Let me read this stuff. Let me write it down. And then, of course, the notebook, too, becomes a place, and we'll see this really clearly with one other practice, where that information is now collected. We can return to it. It's way more useful. We don't rely on our memories. We rely on the notebook. We can go back. Or what did I find out 3 weeks ago? Boom, here it is. Again, with that idea of developing and research. Right? There are thousands of books written, speeches given, free online, right? And research already done on what makes for a healthy relationship and a healthy body, just as examples. Start writing what you learn and then start implementing it with a greater sense of clarity. Read. Listen. I chose healthy body and relationships. Those are really important things in life to try to pursue, let's say, healthiness in. Being a better friend, being a better significant other. You can learn about that. People have been thinking about that for thousands of years. Right? Don't just allow yourself to sit in the sfumato and the lack of clarity and not move through it. Okay? We can and should learn how to learn, not only for the sake of acquiring knowledge, but for the potentially therapeutic results as well. That's what I was saying a moment ago. It's therapy to face the sfumato bravely, gather information, and move towards the goal. Life is full of uncertainties. We can learn to deal with them more calmly. A lot of benefits there. And of course, not only can we research these other things like relationships, let's say fitness or a job, we can research ourselves. Okay, we should work to do a kind of research about our memories, visions of the future, and current perceptions of ourselves and our world through self-writing to test for truthfulness, bias, usefulness, and to find the sources of our ways of thinking, feeling, and acting. To research ourselves might mean confronting questions that we often neglect. Okay, returning to memories that seem to shape us and inquiring into their importance and working to understand them in greater detail. We might also spend time examining our hopes for the future to see in what they are rooted. Okay, that's a great idea. So again, we have this whole general philosophical idea of know yourself, right? That's a research conversation to a large extent. Okay, give your research a clearly stated purpose. Today I want to work on this memory. Today I want to work on developing my physical health, for examples, right? I want to learn how to just eat healthier. Okay. The research should have a clearly stated purpose, and like research in a lab or for a scholarly paper, should result in something new, a new plan of action, a new way of thinking. In this case, it might be a new relationship to something your cousin said to you at a party. This is personal, but whatever, it's an example. Something your cousin said to you at a party once that you haven't been able to shake off for a few years. Yeah, I got really detailed here. Or a new way of confidently discussing who you are on a first date before asking about the other person's interests with a smile. Right? We can learn these things. We can research these skills. We can research ourselves and, again, research these other things as well. So we're learning, which is useful, and then we're practicing how to learn, especially in the face of sfumato, right? That uncertainty, that cloudiness that life has so much of, right? Let's move on. Next one. This is very useful. I've had people respond that this is an ironic way of putting it, right? They responded. This is called the response, right? So one of the great things about philosophy, too, is that it's a companion, as I've been saying, right? We want certain things ready at hand. You have a thought, which we already described as a flying thought. One way you might want to respond to it, instead of following it, I think I did give the bad pigeon analogy on this already, right? Instead of following it, you might want to sit down and write about it. Okay, we're hit with what at times might seem to be seemingly random emotions. Okay, from time to time, we all get sucker punched, and the only thing worse than getting hit is getting hit by surprise. As much as we might have built up a strong inner fortress with a habitual practice or practices, it is near impossible to avoid the random sporadic attack of negative feelings and thoughts. Once again, self-writing can be helpful here. Maybe you can keep a small notebook in your pocket or a small piece of paper in your pocket. Maybe you can have a notebook in your car or in your office. If none of that works, use your phone to type out some thoughts. The idea here is that you are trained in writing as a way of seeing your thoughts more clearly and taking action as a means of getting out of your head, right? So this is a great, very simple idea. You have a new way to respond now. Instead of following the pigeon or the negative thought, you have a new strategy. Implement it, right? Wherever you are, that's why I say in your car, in the office, right? In your home, whatever, maybe get a small one with you. They have really small notebooks that are actually pretty cool. Keep it in a notebook or a backpack or whatever, right? Or briefcase, whatever. It's a great idea. And I even get into sort of a more imagination-based response framework where instead of getting anxious in the moment, maybe you can't even write, maybe you don't want to take your phone out, you could actually imagine yourself writing. So if you have, let's say, a calm or a calming, better way to put it, writing practice that might be in a specific space of your home or a notebook that you enjoy using or a ritual around your writing, imagine yourself doing it. So you don't have to necessarily respond in the moment with writing, but you can respond in your imagination with, you know what, this flying thought, I'm not going to deal with it now, and I'm going to just deal with it when I'm at home writing. See yourself at home writing, because that should be a good thing. That whole image of you grappling with the good and the bad things in life should be one that is therapeutic, because you know the writing works. So the response could literally mean getting good at or habituating yourself to when you have a negative thought, instead of trying to just think about it, you write about it. Or if you don't have that accessible to you in the moment, you start seeing this general, you know, this idea of response as a lifestyle in your imagination and in your actions. Right? So we could see maybe once again that we can confront questions, as we said with research a moment ago. And another way to embody this idea of response that could be, again, in our thinking or in our writing, depending on what's accessible, is how to deal with anxiety. So again, anxiety, we're going to talk about it a lot. I think it's a very common aspect of being a person, something that I think we pretty much all deal with, so it really warrants our attention. And philosophy is here to help with that, right? So I think I may have already mentioned this, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but we confront our anxiety or anxious thoughts with, is it true? Is it real? Is it happening? Which is to say, this thing I think is happening or going to happen. Is it helpful to think about this? Is this in my control? Right. So is this anxious thought, again, anxiety, we can sort of define it generally for now as negative thoughts about the future, negative images of what might happen. And then in addition to that, I think usually it's accompanied by the idea that we can't deal with it, right? That we'll succumb to the negativity or it'll stop us from doing what we need to do in life. So it's not only just the event itself that scares us. Again, we're making the image anyway, but it's the image of the self we have that we won't be able to deal with it, right? So here we are. Respond to that. Keep writing at hand as a strategy. Keep imagining yourself writing as an at or on-hand strategy, and you have a new way to respond now. It's a great tool. Right, take your notebook out or sit down and write for a minute. Good idea. And this actually goes really nicely into the next strategy, because I've already been sort of using this phrase, right? Ready at hand repetition. Repetition is powerful, and writing the same phrases on a daily basis, maybe even more than once a day, will help us engrave them into our minds and souls. These phrases can be useful as guides to how we should live or not live. It might be the case that you need some short daily reminders on how to act, think, and feel, and others on how to not think, act, and feel. So for me, we've already talked about this, right? Literally for me, life is not a race. Whereas at the beginning of my, daily meditation, morning meditation, I'll say I'm thankful for today's opportunities to practice X, Y, or Z, whatever I'm doing, right? So one's positive, one's negative. We could benefit from both. So we can make these phrases for ourselves, and we could also, of course, get them from reading literature, reading philosophy. We can quote people in our lives, we can quote movies, whatever, right? But we want to have these phrases ready to go. So when we write them, once again, especially with, we write them repetitively on a regular basis, the idea of to engrave in our souls, that's also a very, very sort of philosophical idea. The person who reminds themselves, hopefully, that life is not a race, life is not a competition, will then be able to catch themselves when they feel like they're about to start racing or feel like they're going to be competing with somebody for no reason. It'll change the way we think, feel, and act, especially if it's repetitive. Right, so it's not just writing or thinking, right? It's writing, thinking, reading, rereading, meditating on, right? Defining what it really means. Also, I think repeating something in writing brings us closer to acting on it, because writing it is an action, right? We're out of our head, which I think could also be very powerful. And in this section, we get into why memento mori a little bit, right? So I'll read this. I think this is just a cool idea, right? So one suggestion for a potentially powerful short phrase to repeat in our writing and thinking is memento mori. The Stoic school of philosophy from the ancient world encourage us to remember that we are mortal and that everyone around us shares that fate. To remind ourselves of this on a daily or regular basis should encourage us to take care of life, as we are more aware of its fragility. We can learn to fear other things less and be less annoyed as to even have a negative feeling or bad interaction with someone is better than to not have it at all. It can also help us live with a greater sense of passion and urgency in the face of our confrontation with our own end. One might argue that we can only truly love ourselves and others the best we can when we realize that there might not be tomorrow. To call the short phrase memento mori to mind might be our ticket to a little extra freedom, tranquility, and confidence. Things to think about, writing that every day. I have a sticker. Honestly, too, we're asynchronous, but I moved recently. I'm going to put up this really cool, I think it's cool, painting that's basically a memento mori painting. It's a famous, if you type in like memento mori painting on Google, you'll find it. It's a flower, a skull, and an hourglass. So very interesting in my opinion. I used to have a sticker that said memento mori that I had to take the sticker off of the wall in my old apartment though, which was upsetting. And then, you know, I'd throw it out. But ultimately this painting, I think for me, I do look at it every day and I do find that it does inspire me. So powerful images too could be interesting, right? Maybe there's art that you like. But the key here with ready hand repetition is that it's something that we repeat, something that's useful, and something that we engrave into our souls that helps us live better, right? Next one, this is a short one, right? The vent. Venting can be important. I think venting to other people is cool. Sometimes we don't want to do that too frequently because I feel like we drag people down sometimes. But that's powerful as well. And the best part about, once again, writing in a private notebook is that you can vent and you're not affecting anybody else. So when we vent in self-writing, we are not only venting. We should be sure to begin and end the writing session with a sense of direction that aims towards our growth and highest goals and goods, right? So it's not just about venting. It's venting, once again, with a sense of purpose. But do vent. Get it off your chest. Get it out of your system. I think that's really important, right? Once again, you might have times where you want to explode and it wouldn't be appropriate. Use a notebook for that, right? We should work even when venting to start and begin on a note of empowerment, gratitude, and some hope as we try to apply our reason to find out what is true about our current emotional state. Because venting could show us important things about ourselves too. So we have to consider it. That's a good one, I think. If you find yourself, you know, venting a lot, think about writing it. So I have a few more here. So we're running out of time because this is going to cut me off at 30 minutes. So I'm going to stop here and we'll continue with the next episode. Thank you for listening. Talk soon.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? Hope all is well. Here we are again. We're going to be finishing up our conversation of the self-writing guide with the last few strategies. So we're going to jump right in here. This one, number 7, a toolbox for living well, the Hupnamata. I'm going to read this paragraph. I think it's pretty good at explaining the technique for us. So we can collect words and use them to work on ourselves and our lives. It is very common nowadays that if you buy a calendar or planner, each page might have a quote from an influential person to inspire you. The Hupnamata is an opportunity to construct that kind of collection for yourself with your own goals in mind. This strategy suggests that you use a notebook as a place to gather quotes that may come from different sources, such as books, movies, songs, your studies, and even your own reflections on things said by family members, friends, and significant others, among others. These quotes are then to be read, reread, meditated upon, discussed with others, and function as guides of conduct for you. It can be viewed as a personally crafted book of words to live by. So, I love this strategy. I teach this a lot. We will sort of re-encounter this and get some more information on it in the philosophical practices chapter in our bibliotherapy book. But I feel like for me, this has been really useful. So I wanted to talk about it early as well, right? I'm a big movie person. I listen to music every day. I also listen to audiobooks a lot. I read a lot. So for me, collecting these quotes and then having them play a role in my self-writing has been really helpful, right? We'll talk about this from Foucault's perspective. He's big on this idea. This was big in the ancient world, right? This idea of a guide of conduct, something that we return to. All of these things really play nicely into shaping ourselves, right? And also this is great because we start seeing the world as a set of tools and possibilities and opportunities for resources to shape ourselves, right? There's a reason why you return to certain artists. There's a reason why you return to certain albums. There's a reason why you return to certain directors and like their work, right? It's connecting to you in a specific kind of way. The Hopnamatz is like, let me collect what's useful here. And this was the strategy I may have mentioned this, but I've had students pair this with pre-existing reading practices around religion. So I had a student who would read the Bible frequently, and they paired that with this practice where they, instead of just reading the Bible, they would open a notebook next to it and then start taking certain aspects of the text into their notebook, those that really spoke to them. And then their notebook would also be something they could read throughout the day or read, you know, once or twice a week in addition to their reading of the Bible. That became like extra useful, right? So it became a good addition to a pre-existing, I would say, spiritual practice that involved religion and reading. And then it kind of imbued it with an even greater sense of specificity, right? Made it even more applicable to their way of life. And they really seemed like they enjoyed that. So the Hopnamatz, we're extracting what's useful, we're collecting it, and we're revisiting it. I think it's an interesting practice to consider. Now this next one I think is really specific. But I think confidence is super important, and it's something that we don't train at all in school, but it's really necessary for school and pretty much everything else in life. So I suggest that we think about confidence narratives as self-writing, right? So among other virtues, confidence is largely about what stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. We can all think of people, if not think of ourselves, who have been through a lot, have achieved great things, challenged themselves frequently, and yet lack confidence. Belief in ourselves can largely be attributed to the way we talk to ourselves about who we are, what we've done, and what is possible for us. Many of these internal voices may connect easily to an external voice that we once heard. Confidence is necessary and can be worked on by establishing competence. That competence does not become confidence unless we also practice the art of reminding ourselves that not only can we confront our fears and control them, but also that we have been willing and that we are still willing to face difficult or scary tasks that might lead us to goodness. Okay, we can take time to sit and write about all that has gone well for us in our gratitude writing. And also in this self-writing practice, we can focus on what we have done to influence those outcomes, how we have grown, and how we have been competent in the past. We should work to honestly highlight our wins, our moments of strength and goodness to display to ourselves that we are in fact capable of thriving in an uncertain present and future. Look for the power, find it, write about it, and revisit the writings or add more when required. One other pathway to confidence is to confront our irrational fears on paper. Writing about our thoughts, feelings, and actions sheds a light on them in a sense. And in a sense, is an effective way of calling ourselves out. When we start examining our fears instead of running from them, we gain a higher degree of control. We are confronting them instead of running from them and listening to every command they bark at us. We can learn to conquer some fears and maybe walk alongside others such that when they arise, we do not succumb to them and entertain thoughts and feelings or take actions that are unhealthy for us and or others. So, confidence through a couple pathways here. Confidence through, I would even write on the page, right? Confident narratives. Boom. Here's how I've succeeded. Right, here's how things have gone well for me. Here's how I've once again played a role in that. Then the other side of that, here's what I'm still afraid of. Let me detail this thing. So again, I'm literally not running from it. I'm running into it, but I'm controlling the narrative with my writing. Right, so two pathways of confidence there. Confrontation of the fears, reminders of the competence. And that's that for that section, but I just think that's a great thing to think about because confidence is something that we all, I think, could benefit from. Confidence is virtuous. Confidence is not arrogance. It's the balance between arrogance and cowardliness. We all need confidence. That's a great self-writing idea, I think. Next one, this is big for our class, right? We have a whole book of questions on Blackboard called Philosophical Meditations. So I suggest on number 9, questions. We all have a lot of questions. Some are large, some are small, and all could benefit from clearer examination. Sitting down and writing a burning question on the top of the page and working to write as many thoughts you have in whatever format works for you is a great habit to have. This sort of pairs nicely with research, right? Because ultimately you'd have a research question. And I think this is slightly different because it might not necessarily feel like research, right? So for example, a question like, what is my purpose? What should I pursue this year? Is kind of research-esque, but it doesn't necessarily involve consumption, right? So for that research example, the first one, it was more like, okay, how do I figure this out? Let me read, listen, right? With these types of questions, I would say it's more about listening to yourself. And again, of course, we can pair them, as I said, at the initial onset of this discussion about the techniques. But I think just generally speaking with the philosophical meditation, we may find that a lot of them don't necessarily require external research. They really require a lot of internal reflection, right? Once again, know yourself. And learning how to ask good questions is really powerful, right? Learning how to ask ourselves questions that guide us to growth will help us do the same thing with others. One of the best ways to encourage people is through asking them questions. One of the best ways, or probably the best way, of course, to understand people is by asking them questions. All good relationships, all healthy relationships involve teaching and learning within ourselves and then offering that to others. Good teaching and learning has to revolve around questions, not statements. Right? So training ourselves to question ourselves and our world is a powerful tool for leading a good life. And self-writing makes this process much easier and more effective, for sure. Questions can drive us to feeling very stressed, anxious, right? We need to take control of that. Take the burning questions, write them down, again, examine them. We have a lot of hopefully very thought-provoking questions in our Philosophical Meditations book that pertain, again, really nicely to this strategy. And I ask it every class or every session, every week. You sit with Philosophical Meditation notebook open and you take time to write answers to those questions. Let's keep it moving here. Keeping track. So our notebooks can also be places where we keep track of our progress and failures. Similar to the daily practice from Epictetus that encouraged us to do this as a result of simply having a day. So you wake up, go ahead and do it, right? This kind of keeping track can focus more on a specific idea or type of development we are looking for. We can work to write down what we consume in terms of food, what we listen to, what we read, with the intention of seeing how our habits are serving us or damaging us, right? So again, the notebook can become a place, and you see this a little bit in like the personal development world, I think. There's sort of at times what I think is an obsession with keeping track of things. And I mean that like kindly, right? I think, again, anything that's excessive is likely not a good thing. But I think there are good examples of this in the personal development world of just tracking, right? Tracking our habits. And I think that could be a profoundly philosophical self-writing exercise, right? Because again, if we're here to shape ourselves, in terms of like creating healthier ways of thinking and feeling and acting, which is what we're doing, right? Keeping track of what we consume and what we do. And then not just, again, from Epictetus's perspective of I'm making a to-do list, but from, okay, so this month, let me look back. All right, what was I doing? And I love to use simple examples with this, but I think, working to keep track of tasks that connect to specific kinds of development we're working towards, right? And including notes on how we feel, think before, during, and after the task. Right, and for the duration of the task, and how, once again, keeping track of how we acted during the task. Did we really apply ourselves, for example, right? It'll work. You want to develop expertise in something? Well, keep track of how often you read about it. You want to develop, maybe you can return to the simple example, but you want to develop a certain physical skill, right? You want to get really good at yoga. You want to get really good at Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You want to get really good at running, whatever, it makes sense to keep track of it. Keep track of your progress. Sit, write. How did it go today? How much did I do? What was my time? Right? How many times did I train, for example, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu this month? After each session, sit and write. Well, was I ready to train today? How did I feel during? What did I learn? So we're tracking with that in mind. We're using our notebooks for that, right? We could also do this in a very spiritual way. Was I less angry this week? Well, every time you get angry, write about it. Am I still being conquered? Let's say, to use kind of a commonly used term in regards to, it's kind of like a psychotherapeutic term, right? Or a psychology term. When I was confronted with the same trigger, did I respond better? How often did this trigger arise? How did my responses shift over time? Why did they shift? Then I could look back, right? So keeping track with a specific development in mind over a longer period of time, right? We got two more here, then we'll be finishing up. So this is, I think, an interesting one too, number 11. Bird's eye view, one sheet. So this is where I think, again, this could be a larger piece of paper. It's getting a little creative here maybe. We really want to get a bird's eye view, which is to say a look from above on a major issue or major issues. Okay. We may find that we are bothered by the same things over and over again. And in our other forms of writing, they keep coming up. This is where, okay, this kind of connects to the tracking, right? The previous one we just talked about. We can take one blank sheet of paper, put this idea at the top of it, and really spend the whole sheet breaking it down. Making time to sit with that one memory and breaking it down and in detail, or that one fear, the virtue you'd like to develop, or vice you'd like to control, and focusing with singularity might be the antidote, right? So we're seeing some, I think, some very interesting connections here, right? This is like hyper-focusing on one thing. When we are done with the sheet, we can put it away to revisit it or burn it in a kind of metaphorical letting go of what's on it. That's kind of cool. A psychic suggested that to me once. Yeah, I believe in psychics. I have a psychic in my life who will just kind of call me. And I had a bad job initially out of grad school. And she was like, every day write a little bit about what happened and then just burn the paper. Metaphors. Okay, so this strategy can also work with crafting clearer paths to development. Sometimes we need to see everything in one place. I'm big on this too. This is nice, right? And I, for example, in the back of my day-to-day notebook now, I have a larger piece of paper folded up where I kind of section my life off. So it's like, all right, here are my big tasks I have to do with teaching, big tasks I have to do with my work as a student, big tasks I have to do with my work as an author. And it's like, these are the tasks that are so big, they won't happen day-to-day. Like it'll take 8 months, a year, whatever. And then like the day-to-day writing on the page of the notebook should all connect to these larger goals on this larger page in the back of the notebook, right? So the one sheet, right, the bird's eye view is to give us this kind of capital P sense of purpose and this idea that it's sort of like a very organized vision when we're talking about the second part of the strategy, right? So the first part is bird's eye view, one sheet. Let me get a look at this one reoccurring thing or this one powerful thing I need to examine it just for one sheet by itself. Right. And then the second one sheet strategy is to get kind of everything in one place, as I just said, right? To get all of our lives as simple and as clearly stated, or as simply and as clearly stated as possible in one place, such that we have a guide. Right. There's a great quote, I think it's from Seneca, right? That no wind is favorable for a ship that doesn't know to which port it's sailing. So we need to have some sense of direction. Right, that's a really cool idea, I think, from Seneca. Everything will just seem random if you have no general path for yourself. So this idea of the bird's eye one sheet, part two, gives us that path. Right? And we all have multiple roles. That's key. We might have full-time jobs, relationships, side business, fitness goals, right? We can take one blank sheet and organize all these things such that there is a space for each of these major aspects of our lives. Then we can spend a few minutes thinking and writing about what needs to go into each box or column that represents the role and will inspire good action. This creates a literal bird's eye view over the major aspects of our lives. This will make everything feel and actually be more manageable because it will be clearer than cacophonous, disorganized thoughts. Because it's overwhelming when you've got a million things on your plate, right? Again, you want to thrive in your relationship. You want to be a good friend. You want to be, so we have to get all, maybe, right? This might not be used for everybody, but for me, I've used this. This has helped me immensely, right? Break it down, organize it, put lines, right? To make boxes or columns or whatever, title each one, get a general clear understanding of what the major tasks are, should create some clarity, help us move forward. Right, here we go, final exercise or final technique for exercises. And this is, you know, I think also a good way to end ironic because I hope you carry something with you from this, right? So this is called leaving things behind and carrying things forward. Okay, so again, similar to research to an extent, but much of what we do with our memory, or in this case, much of what we may not be doing, affects us negatively. We might locate some memories that stick with us and have impacted us significantly in this exercise. If we carry these memories as pain, or let's say only as pain, and allow them to influence our actions, thoughts, and feelings in the present, they are, of course, also shaping our future. What should we carry and what should we let go of? This is the central question of this exercise. So I think we could do this exercise when something kind of comes up, right? So we might find that we're returning to a memory when we shouldn't be, or returning to a memory in an incorrect way that isn't helping us or that isn't truthful. We can sit down and ask ourselves, what should I take forward with this? What should I leave behind? Or I think we could even do this and just, you know, as like a way to check in with ourselves here and there, right? This could also be maybe something you do once and it really clicks and works for us, right? But ultimately, I think it's commonly the case that our past influences our present and then thus our future in ways that we don't want it to. So even just putting that question to ourselves, right, and really taking it seriously and writing about it, right, I think could be really helpful. Painting a more detailed image of the memory. Okay, seeing the emotions around the memory. Why are we carrying it with us? Opening ourselves up to carrying these things forward, right? So the things that we learned, right, about the world, things that we learned about ourselves, right? Some memories, of course, are going to be super painful. Seeing them perhaps as strength, as sources of strength because we made it through something. Allowing them to not only torture us, but to see that, you know, these are reasons why I should be confident. Okay? We don't necessarily have to only focus on the pain. We can focus on, once again, the strength that we got from the pain. Epictetus, one of his most interesting quotes, I think, is, "In pain, you will find strength." So this is a way to find strength because you're asking a different question. You're not just saying, what was the pain here? Or why is this bothering me? You're saying, what should I leave behind? What should I take forward? You take the strength forward, right? And that's potentially a new insight that could be really helpful for us, right? So how do we relate to our past in the healthiest way possible? Well, we have to make sure it's not only painful. And of course, it will be. Elements of everyone's past are going to be painful. We have to make room for that pain. Again, we have to learn from it. This is a way to learn from it in a way where the learning will actually be useful. We have a great essay we're going to read. I'll allude to it a little bit now, and I'll keep it brief. But if you went camping, right, in the morning of, this is from the School of Life. This is a great essay we're going to look at, right? If you went camping and the morning of, you made a specific type of coffee, you put a specific type of shirt on, you were with your friend, right? You went to the campsite, it's sunny, there's trees, there's dirt, right? And all of a sudden you see a bear. That's a reason to be afraid, right? Bears, you don't want to get involved, right? So that makes sense. You were afraid in that moment, right? If you don't learn how to leave behind the fact that you saw a bear that one day in that one forest, right? And it was just something that happened to you, right? If you don't learn to leave behind that emotion of being afraid, that rational emotion of being afraid, what may happen is all of a sudden now, years later, when you make that coffee again, you smell it, you might, all of a sudden fear might rise up in you because you think you'll see the bear. You're making that delusional connection that whenever I smell that coffee, here comes a bear. You might be walking around the Bronx or Queens thinking that you're going to see a bear. You don't want to live like that, right? So you have to confront that memory. And the great word from that essay, I think, is you have to localize it. This happened once. This will not happen. Or let's even say it's incredibly unlikely this will happen every time I see trees and it's sunny and I'm wearing that shirt. It doesn't make sense. But if we don't talk to the memory, and again, what should I carry forward? What should I leave behind? Right? Leave behind that camping equals bear. Or that shirt equals bear. We have to detach, localize, leave it. So I hope this was helpful. Those are our 12 techniques now in 2 episodes. So once again, choose what might sound interesting to you. Try to adopt it as soon as possible. When we do our bibliotherapy, I think the philosophy will help us with these things, right? And thank you for listening. Take care.